Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created Webseed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery. And our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com. Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. In uncertain times, you need gear you can count on. That's why I teamed up with Daniel Vitalis to launch SupplySource.com. It's a new online retailer offering extremely durable gear for emergency preparedness and long-term survival. Everything we offer survives my daily use test on a ranch in Texas, plus Daniel's outdoor endurance test in the rugged wilderness of Maine. Most of the stuff we test ends up in a pile of trash because it breaks. The stuff that doesn't break, we stock it on SupplySource.com. To get the site started, we've launched it with a line of rugged, reliable, waterproof LED flashlights, now chosen by military and law enforcement everywhere. And we'll soon be adding a whole new brand of emergency water filters, family defense gear, and urban survival tools. When you want your gear to really work, get it from SupplySource.com.
If I ever go looking for my heart's desire again, I won't look any further than my own backyard.
And think to yourself, there's no place like home.
There's no place like home.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
That's right. You've landed on Homegrown Health with Joni Cox, a show about everything and anything pertaining to home, including parental rights, home birthing, homeschooling, and even raising homegrown kids naturally.
But just try to stay out of my way. Just try. I'll get you, my pretty.
Do you presume to criticize the great Oz? Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Content in this program is not intended to diagnose or treat any ailment or illness and is for educational purposes only. It's Homegrown Health on Natural News Radio.
I'm your host, Joni Cox, here to inspire, encourage, and empower you to take charge of your health and healing all from home. Today, we have kind of a jam-packed show. I'm really glad to be with you and so glad that you joined me. We're going to be talking about parental rights, first of all. That's something that's near and dear to my heart. There's some breaking news on that issue. And then we're also going to be joined by Liam Sheff, author of the book Official Stories that just came out. And he'll be joining us here in a little bit. But first, with parental rights, it is breaking news because just yesterday, the Parental Rights Amendment has been introduced in the U.S. Congress. Just to give you a little bit of history, if you have not gone to parentalrights.org yet, I would ask that you visit that and help sign the petition to show your support for helping parents maintain their parental rights. Right now, there is a really hot deal going on in Washington where they are trying to fast track and approve the UN Council to the Rights of the Child They're trying to fast-track and approve that treaty by November 20th of this year. And if you care about your parental freedoms, your parental rights to make medical choices for your child, to make educational choices for your child, and do not want a government entity or a social worker having the power to decide what's in the best interest of your child, then this is the petition that you need to really look into. What they found in the U.S. Constitution is that there are not many specifics going on when it concerns upholding parental rights, even though the U.S. Supreme Court over and over again has said that that's one of the most fundamental and foundational liberties of parents. It is being threatened every day, and judgments are being made every day in this country, which threaten your parental rights. It's very simple. The UNCRC is adopted all over the world and many other countries. The U.S. Constitution does not allow us to adopt a treaty without it becoming the law of the land. It therefore becomes the supreme law of the land. And other countries, for instance, that practice, let's say, Sharia law, okay? Sharia law surpasses the UNCRC, but not in this country. And that's what makes our country and the democracy, what's left of it that we have here, that's what makes it such a special case. And that's why having our parental rights infringed upon with the UNCRC is such an urgent matter. Its effect would be binding on American family courts and policymakers, and the CRC would automatically override almost all American laws on children and families due to the supremacy clause in the U.S. Constitution that I was just referring to, which is actually in Article 6. And one of the things that I find interesting, especially with the fact that it's trying to be fast-tracked and ratified by November 20th of this year under the Obama administration, is that Congress would have the power to directly legislate on all subjects necessary to comply with this treaty. This would constitute the most massive shift of power from the states to the federal government in American history. That's a scary thought for sure. And if you look at everything else that's going on in our country, this is just simply one more piece to the puzzle to everything that the government is trying to. And I'm talking about the worldwide government, all of the governments united together in the New World Order aspect. It's everything they're trying to obtain. It's the elitist, all-controlling status. And we as the American people need to exercise what rights we have left and put a stop to something like this. Now get this. This is what really is pretty much disturbing about the UNCRC, I mean, among everything else. A committee of 18 experts from other nations sitting in Geneva has the authority to issue official interpretations of the treaty, which are then entitled to binding weight in American courts and legislatures. This effectively transfers ultimate authority for all policies in this area to this foreign committee. So there's 18 quote-unquote experts from the rest of the world that's going to decide what happens to your child. And what's interesting is some of the people that still sit on this panel of experts, one of them is from, I believe it's in Africa, where they're still trying to decide whether or not honor killings is something that is something they want to stop or not. Like it's an option. And honor killings, of course, is if a girl gets raped, then the father or the family members have the right to kill that child. That's absurd to me. It's absolutely absurd. And it's anti-American for us to even be considering this treaty. And as I mentioned earlier, the best interest of the child principle would give the government the ability to override every decision made by every parent if a government worker disagrees with the parent's decision. A child's right to be heard would allow him or her to seek governmental review of every parental decision with which a child disagreed. And this is not just simply reserved for cases of abuse where there are truly unfit parents. These are cases where mom and dad want their child to eat a certain way. The child doesn't feel like they want to eat a certain way. This just happened. I mean, mom packed a turkey sandwich and something that was considered to be a healthy and balanced lunch. And the government worker in a school decided that that wasn't a nutritious lunch. So they gave the kid chicken nuggets and a crappy lunch compared to the turkey sandwich and the healthy apple or carrot sticks that was in the child's lunch. I mean, this is the level of absurdity that this is getting to without the UNCRC being passed. Can you imagine what can happen or what will happen to our parental rights if it's happening in hospitals now where parents are getting their newborns kidnapped from them without even due process, without even following the way that the rules are supposed to be among CPS workers, they're supposed to get a judge's signature. And a lot of times they don't. But once your child is gone and taken from you, the trauma has already begun. The damage is already done. And they continue to abuse their perceived positions of power. This is what the Parental Rights Amendment is going to protect against. Again, to learn more, go to parentalrights.org. You can watch one of their movies. You could watch either of them. There's one called The Child, and there's another one that you can watch called Overruled. You can go to overruledthemovie.com. In fact, my first guest on Homegrown Health, you can go back into my archives page. Just go ahead and stay here on naturalnewsradio.com. Click on my picture, and that will take you to the archive page. And the very first interview I did was with Michael Ferris, who is the president of parentalrights.org. He also founded Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and we discussed parental rights and a story that was just quite sickening about a family who had their parental rights completely infringed upon, and they were, and it's a story worth listening to, and it needs to be told, and that more people need to understand, because it can happen to you. And the whole purpose of the Parental Rights Amendment is to amend the Constitution to preserve our parental rights, something that is very foundational and, I believe, God-given. It's not something that a government has the power to give. Anyway, a proposed amendment to the U.S. Constitution that would preserve the longstanding traditional right of parents to direct the upbringing and education of their children was introduced yesterday in U.S. Congress. Lead sponsor Trent Franks, Republican out of Arizona, was joined by 32 co-sponsors in introducing the amendment in the House. And I want to make a comment that this article came from Homeschool Legal Defense Association that I'm reading to you, but that the Parental Rights Amendment and the parental rights issue is a bipartisan issue. The people at the foundation understand this. They don't believe it's a Republican or a Democrat issue, but that it is a human rights and a parental rights and a bipartisan issue. I just wanted to let you know that I feel the same way. So anyway, back to the article. The Senate version, led by Senator Jim DeMint out of South Carolina, had 9 co-sponsors at its introduction. Supporters anticipate a congressional hearing on the measure, given lead sponsor Trent Franks' position as chairman of the Constitution Subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee, to which the House version will be then assigned. This marks the third straight session of Congress in which the PRA has been introduced, and support for the measure is definitely growing. The PRA had 141 co-sponsors in the House during the last session of Congress, but they expect to see even more support this time around, according to Michael Ferris, president of parentalrights.org, which of course organizes this grassroots effort for the amendment. Michael Ferris goes on to say that the Supreme Court has accurately said that parental rights are perhaps the oldest of the fundamental liberty interests recognized by the court, yet those rights now lack sufficient legal protection under the Constitution. Thanks to concerned citizens and engaged leaders in Congress, they look forward to correcting that problem through the adoption of this amendment. So please, parents, I urge you again, go to parentalrights.org, read over the petition, sign it if you agree and that's something that you want to support and you feel needs to be amended to the Constitution. And keep in mind that because this is a grassroots effort, you can get involved if you feel so led to do so. You can hold screenings and viewings of both movies, either The Child or Overruled the Movie, which is at overruledthemovie.com. And it's just a brief overview. You can hold these in your home and have other parents over to discuss this. You can have them in your libraries. You can go to any place that would allow you to show it for free, preferably. Otherwise, I mean, if you want to charge, you can. But it's a grassroots effort, and they are trying to always earn support and gain support from as many legislators as possible. If this is something that's so important to you, I urge you and encourage you to write into your congressman and ask them to support amending the Constitution for parental rights. Well, I'm going to shift gears now and talk and chat a little bit with Liam Sheff, author extraordinaire, among many other things. He's a talented cartoonist. He's very funny, lots of knowledge, and he's an investigative researcher and journalist. Real quick, the book is on Amazon in the UK and Europe and on CreateSpace in the US. It's written in a very entertaining way and has a lot of key medical history in it. And we're going to cover some of that today, too. Liam, hello to you again. Tell us a little bit more about your book.
The book is Official Stories. I've been on a variety of radio shows talking about it. People are buying it. People are really liking it, which makes me happy.
And of course it should. You worked really hard on this book.
No, I just knocked it out in a couple of weeks and hardly care. No, of course, I cared about it very much. It comes from years of research, but I wrote it so it would be fun and so people would enjoy it. But they're really enjoying it, and they're telling me so, and they're writing me reviews, and they're writing reviews on their own, and reviews are going on blogs. And that's a wonderful thing, because this is a book that's a sort of a corrective history book about really American history in the 20th century. And, you know, what really makes us go to war, the clandestine services, foreign services, CIA, that kind of thing. What we really don't get to do, which is vote for things that actually happen. And then we get past that sort of government thing. And, yeah, through the JFK rabbit hole or down that rabbit hole. And, yes, down the 9/11 rabbit hole and answer a lot of questions. Then get into the health stuff with the vaccines and the HIV testing and all the drugs that they give people. And then out into other sciences like astronomy and Big Bang Theory. And are these real or are these sort of religious fixations? Is Big Bang really a science? Can you do any science? Is Darwinism a science? My answer is no, it's not. But, you know, that's in the book.
And I found it very cleverly done. And like I said, I love the meaty aspects of everything with the research. And you do cite a lot of your research as well. And so it's not like you have these, you know, just wacky theories that are unfounded. No, you actually give a really good presentation of why you're presenting things the way that you are in the book. And I have to say, I absolutely love it.
Yeah, you enjoyed, you had a review copy. I think we were talking about the Darwin stuff, but I want to say it's not a book you read. It doesn't interrupt the reading with research. It's not
no.
a footnoted book. It tells you the story. And then at the end, I tell you some of the things, not all, because I've read thousands and thousands of articles on some of these topics, maybe all told. I can't even tell you how many articles I've read, medical journal articles I've read on a variety of them. And there's no point in listing all of those unless you want a 40-page bibliography, which is just for academics to make people think that they're impressive or to trust them. But I say in the beginning, you either like me or you don't. You either believe that I'm trying to tell you what I believe is the truth or you don't. And then at the end, I tell you, here's how to go search what I find. Here's how to search word strings very effectively. Here are the five best websites I know for this. Here's the official critic, you know, the person defending the official story. So you can go read the rather insane logic-deprived arguments of the mainstream, you know, regarding any of these issues. But you asked me about the Darwin thing, and you said you were looking forward to reading that. So I want to ask you, what did you learn about Darwin?
Nothing that I hadn't really learned before. Because I did not fully read your chapter.
Well, that's not that. Do you see the audience? Do you see what she did? She answered the question in one way, but she actually didn't read the chapter. All right. So, well, you had been asking me about Darwinism.
I guess my basic premise, how I feel about it, is that it takes more faith to believe in this Big Bang theory
or accidental existence
than it does to actually believe that there was some kind of creative, intelligent designer of the universe. That's what I have believed. I guess what really irps me is that they present it not like a theory. And
did you say irps? Did you say it irps you?
I did. It irps me. Yes. I don't know if that's spelled with two E's or a U, but however, it irps me.
Okay.
It bites my bippy that they present it as an actual fact instead of a theory. Theory allows room for thought. Fact does not as much.
Well, remember that Big Bang Theory, we just jumped into astronomy. Now, the Darwinian theory would be that all of life was here and that it changes by accident. So that's Darwinism. All of life was already here. And maybe now they're saying maybe it came from another planet, but that was also an accident. And then it came around by accident. Then the Big Bang Theory is there was nothing which exploded. So these are the two leading lights of our scientific age. There's nothing which exploded and everything else is a big mistake or an accident. Now, I'm not a Christian and I'm not a Christian theist and I'm not a Christian intelligent design advocate, but I can tell you that those people like Stephen C. Meyer who wrote a really great book called Signature in the Cell, get all of their criticisms correct. All of their criticisms of Darwinism are correct. DNA is a clearly wildly ordered, organized, creative, digital encoding machine.
It's well thought out, one way or another.
That's genius. We don't build things that are that fantastic. And my point of view is that I come from a spiritual background, or my beliefs are, I say I lean east, you know, I have an Eastern take on things. So it's different than the Western. There's the Yahweh, and he built like something out of clay, and then he sort of watched it or walked away. The Eastern view that I inhabit, or that I really like, says that the universe is a creative, intelligent thing. It has a spiritual background component. It manifests as all of these things that we are. We are the manifested mind, soul of the universe. So I believe the universe has a mind and a soul, which makes me different than Darwinists and Big Bang astronomers, who believe
Absolutely. There
was nothing that exploded. There was nothing and it blew up.
And like I said, it just takes more to believe in that than it does to believe the other. And that's where my premise is. And I agree with you.
It's a faith, because Darwinism, like Big Bang Theory, was never a science. You can't do science with survival of the fittest. What is it to be fit? It is to survive. What is it to survive? It's to have been fit. What does it mean to be fit? It means that you had sex and made a baby. Well, because, you know, to survive, I mean, because nothing really survives. We all die. We all go back to the other place and return to the, you know, the energy of the universe. So nothing survives. So they didn't really mean that. They mean, did you have sex and make a baby? But the problem with that is that that doesn't show how a worm would one day become a bird or a whale,
or a fish. So a selfish would become us.
Or a cell would even emerge, because now what these researchers are doing with their very powerful microscopes is they're looking inside the cell. They have been for a number of years, and they say what they found there really surprised them. And I point this out in the book in chapter 8 on Darwinism. Chapter 8 is called Darwin is Dead. That cells on the inside are like three-dimensional jet fighter factory floors working at the speed of sound, with little micro machines carrying heavy loads, curling and uncurling roadways, bubbling out of one little pocket and carrying information into another, unloading it, like landing at a loading dock, depositing it, going back, getting more. This is not something that anybody ever imagined. And the little things that machine the DNA, that come along and transcribe it and unroll it, and then re-roll it and bind it with the histone groups. You know, these, nobody suspected. Darwin didn't have a view of the cell that resembled anything like that. It was just clear jelly. So when he said life comes about by accident and things change because they're lucky, he didn't. By the way, I think, and this may upset some of your listeners, but I point out in the book that these two worldviews, there was a guy who made everything and walked away. He was all powerful, but the thing is cursed. The thing is corrupt. The thing is, you know, deficient in some way. And the idea that the whole thing is a machine, these really run parallel to each other. So what Darwinism did, and this may upset some of your listeners, but what Darwinism did was it took an aspect of that problematic idea that there's a machine that was made by an infinite creator, and that it had to be designed, like somebody made it, and then it, from my point of view, it's constantly designing itself. Yes, there's the creator is us, not you and me, but manifests as all life. Those patterns repeat and repeat and repeat. I don't mean that you and I control all that. I mean, we're manifestations. We're like cells in the body mind of the great creative thing. So where I have what I have in common with the Christians or any other religious people is that the universe to me is alive and has a soul, and that we share in that soul. But I guess what I don't understand is why that the creator of the thing is separate from the creation. I don't share that point of view. You know, the worst part of the world is religious literalism, scientific literalism. When they say that there was nothing which exploded, they're serious. How silly, how absurd is it?
And not only that, how scientific is it? Because most research and really good science, when I like to dig into the meaty or science, they lay it out for you piece by piece, function by function. And there is no function in it accidentally happened.
No, this is an anti-theism. And what Darwin and these guys were saying was, I don't believe they're saying, we don't want to take instructions from the Pope anymore. The world didn't happen because a guy made it. Therefore, it happened, but nobody made it. And that was it. That's the current scientific model, is it didn't happen because Yahweh made it. And that's it. That's the science of evolution. That's the science of astronomy. Now, that's not science. That's just an antithesis, right? They're just arguing against a previously existing idea, which is probably, you know, I can't hold with that kind of religious literalism that says there was a guy who made stuff. To me, the universe is still making, will always be making. And you can call that God. I call it, you know, the creator of the universe is the universe, is the manifesting universe. But to me, there's a sub-level which doesn't manifest, which is infinite and beyond. And so I definitely believe in the spiritual world and all those other things, because to me, they're real. They're very real in my world. And I accept, by the way, all the names of God, I accept all of those as having value. They're ways of looking at the eternal in a moment or in a culture or whatever. But to me, they're also transient. They're also mythic, because they're the way that we describe the indescribable.
No, I just find this kind of exploration and thought very fascinating, in thought and in feeling and in emotion. And you know, you were very free to do that in your book. And I really like how you presented everything, because for a long time, you know, we go to school, we go to the institution, we get taught things as real and true, and these are factual, and we're expected to pass tests on these things. And then you graduate, and there's this whole big old world out there. And sometimes this happens for some people before they graduate. Others, it just takes them living some life and asking the harder questions. And all of a sudden, we start to realize that Christopher Columbus did not discover America.
Right.
You start learning all these things and going, and you just kind of feel like you've been lied to, and like you've been gypped a little bit in the educational department. And most of us feel like we've been gypped a lot in the educational department. And then you start to kind of start to realize the different agendas and the multitude of the institutions in our country. And then you start to kind of, you know, become a freer thinker. And that's what I like about your book. It's like you're just willing to give a different point of view on the so-called official stories and let the reader finish researching for themselves.
Well, thank you. I accept that as a promotion, and I'm going to just take that little recorded bit and play it over and over again on my headphones so I feel good about myself.
You have every reason to feel good about yourself anyway. You completed a book.
Yeah, it's a very cool book. It's very fun, and it is called Official Stories, and you can get it online for $15. The price will go up, but when you go to my website, there will be a code that gives you a discount code, we'll call it, and the price will stay around $15. The reason it goes up is because Amazon charges a lot more, so you got to raise the price so they can give a discount and so on and so forth. The book goes through, or, you know, 20th century American history from Smedley Butler through the CIA. Again, JFK, very important story in my mind.
Yes.
9/11, the vaccine history, the suppressed vaccine history, which I really had to, you know, research. I just sort of tell this other history. Well, here it is. You make up your own mind, but here's this history.
Yeah, what's the other side to this?
Right. Because the official story, and this is the tagline of the book, the official story is always there to protect officials. And when I understood that, everything in the world became much more comprehensible to me. I went, oh, of course, it's not true. All right, what is true? That's the work. Then you go and you start to discover.
Yes, and I greatly respect and highly appreciate and admire your quest for truth.
And back at you. And I thank you for a few more minutes on your show. We'll see you at the Health Freedom Expo.
Oh, for sure. But I need you to hang on here real quick, because I ain't letting you go that easy. We still have to talk HIV. So we're going to talk about the history of HIV when we come back. You're listening to Homegrown Health. I'm your host, Joni Cox, along with Liam Sheff on naturalnewsradio.com.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com. Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. In uncertain times, you need gear you can count on. That's why I teamed up with Daniel Vitalis to launch SupplySource.com. It's a new online retailer offering extremely durable gear for emergency preparedness and long-term survival. Everything we offer survives my daily use test on a ranch in Texas, plus Daniel's outdoor endurance test in the rugged wilderness of Maine. Most of the stuff we test ends up in a pile of trash because it breaks. The stuff that doesn't break, we stock it on SupplySource.com. To get the site started, we've launched it with a line of rugged, reliable, waterproof LED flashlights, now chosen by military and law enforcement everywhere. And we'll soon be adding a whole new brand of emergency water filters, family defense gear, and urban survival tools. When you want your gear to really work, get it from SupplySource.com.
We're back on Homegrown Health on NaturalNewsRadio.com. I'm Joni Cox. Liam Sheff is joining me, and we have a lot to talk about yet in this segment about his new book called Official Stories. In your book, Liam, you have a chapter on
the book's
vaccine.
Not called Liam. I misunderstood.
In your book, Official Stories,
Liam.
Liam Sheff. Stop. Pause. Like I'm sending a telegram.
Stop. Mother, I want you to stop.
Stop being a mother. Stop.
No.
Stop reading your telegrams.
That's a telegram joke. It's a telegram. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's okay. So in your book, Official Stories, you have this chapter on HIV. And I've made it known that I don't and have not really studied too much into it, other than knowing that it's, like most things, has something to do with the government, likely a made-up disease, affects a lot of people, but likely didn't get here from monkeys.
Yeah, monkeys are the least of our problems.
That's what I kind of thought. They've been here a while.
Yeah, so have we. So that's not the trouble. Now, the official story is pretty crazy. We were talking between segments about, continued about religion, because you said I didn't know we were going to do religion, and talked about the tribal culture that we live in. We're actually a tribal species, and we always pick a father and a mother figure, and we always have rules about sex. We have passages into different ages of your life, threshold experiences. All cultures have these things, and they're wrote. You have the bar and the bat mitzvah in some cultures. You have the sexual coming of age ceremonies in cultures all over the world. Well, we don't believe in any of these things anymore because we're such an atheistic or intellectual scientific, so-called scientific culture. But we have unintentionally psychologically projected new rituals onto the society. The data would say, no, it's not good to inject monkey testicle proteins and formaldehyde into people. Let's not do that. No. It's a ritual. And because the society is so anti its own nature, you know, we have a psychologically schismed society. All we have, and I said this to you on the break, in terms of tribal etiquette is you eat a turkey in November and you buy crap in December.
And go into debt for it.
Go into debt for it. And you said that you eat chocolate in April.
Chocolate bunnies.
Right. Chocolate bunny. Fertility symbol, by the way.
Is it? I've had no problem in that department.
Yes, you have four kids. You're a fertility symbol.
I would love to be, but except for it just doesn't, the reflection isn't always what I want it to be. You look at me and it's like, no. Sure,
I'm going to worship Joni Cox as the fertility goddess. That's what I'm going to start doing.
And you two can look like me.
No, you're a pretty lady. those big blue eyes, right?
Yeah, no, I was talking about everything else south of the border. Hello. The sands have shifted.
She's a pretty lady, everybody. Don't let her say that to herself. So we live in this society where we replaced all our ancient traditions with these crazy, shallow, meaningless things. We used to have traditions around the managing of sexual desire, because sexual desire is problematic. Desire, as somebody pointed out, I realized this in my 20s, desire has no limit, but the capacity to enjoy desire does. And to use it as a metaphor, we'll not just talk about sex, but you could want to eat chocolate all day long. You could eat chocolate only for a number of minutes or hours if you're really gluttonous before you begin to violently expel it from your body. So
right.
the desire for things. And as a male in my 20s, I can tell you that the desire for female attention knew no limits. From 17 to about 25, it's very difficult to even be around a woman, and I found a lot of women attractive, who I found very attractive, to even speak clearly in comprehensible sentences was a feat. You're pretty. Hi.
Is that really how you sounded? Or were you like Mr. Rico Suave trying to make them?
No, I never did the Rico Suave. I liked hitting it off with people where the intellectual overrode the purely physical sensual. But if it was in that physical sensual realm, I was just like, hey.
And the girl saying, cat got your tongue kind of a thing.
No, like just keep talking, saying nothing. And the girl looks at you and goes, just, oh my God, stop. Stop.
You're not earning any brownie points here, buddy.
Stop talking. Stop. You learn the lesson, you know, somewhere in your very early 20s, don't just stop, you know, they're just people, and it's not their fault that you're attracted to them. But the reason that gets into the HIV thing is because what happened for the HIV thing was actually a total pharmaceutical, it was a pharmaceutical incident overlaid upon the society, which has no sexual tribal rules anymore. We don't have coming of age when we're 13, 15, 17. We don't have real together ceremonies, and we don't have even what Europeans still have, which are marriages. American marriage is this monstrously isolating proposition. Well, tribal marriages, you have your partner for making babies, but your best friends, your husband and wife are not your best friend. That's not what their job is.
Right, and that's sad that it's kind of segregated in that way, but it is what it is.
Well, we in this society expect everything from one partner, and we go crazy. We just go crazy. But in tribal societies, you have your wife partner, your husband partner, and you make the babies, and you hopefully do your motherly and fatherly jobs. But then the guys hang out with the guys, and they talk about that stuff, and they have their men's clubs, and they go and scream about their horrible lives. And then they realize that their lives are not horrible. They go back and have a good relationship with their partner. And the women go off and talk about what idiots their husbands are. And they get it out of their system. And they go back and they're nicer to them because they got to blow it off. They blew off steam. We used to have men's and women's groups and societies, but now we're totally culturally integrated. Everybody is the same. Everybody has to get along. Everybody has to communicate all the time. It's really tough. It's tough. It's really confused a lot of our ancient tribal nature. We haven't always been this way. But in 59 or to 60, the birth control pill popped onto the scene, radically changing the relationship between men and women, between men and women, and also between them and sex. So you could have as much sex as you wanted to if you just declared yourself a liberated person and not get pregnant.
And that's not normally how things function. And I think we're seeing now some of the later results health-wise from the birth control introduction.
It's a very dangerous pill, or I should say it's a dangerous pill over time. It can be very dangerous for individuals in a moment, but it's the effect it had on the psyche of the culture was to give birth to a notion of sexual liberation, which was totally fraudulent and pharmaceutical. I always say the summer of love was the summer of pharma, or the summer of the pill. You couldn't have had this expression of free sex if girls were getting pregnant. This was a totally pharmaceutical construct. People don't realize that. They think that we actually live in a liberated society. We don't. We're a very conservative, confused society. We don't explore psychically, psychologically. People are terrified of therapy. We live in a society of a very frightened people who don't look inside. But sex is something that we expect even young people to have without consequence because of this bloody birth control pill. And the HIV thing came along as an idea, as a new Leviticus. It was, well, we have to have a rule about sex. We'll come up with this make-believe thing that kills you in 40 years and we don't really know how. Just keep sending money. It's a religion. And that's the short argument, by the way. That's the short
argument. Wow. Yeah, because I'd like to explore this a little bit more. Speaking of exploration, right? Let's break this down. So you're saying 5960, they introduced the birth control pill. Women didn't get pregnant, so that changed how the relationship was between women and men. And they started having sex without consequence. And you're saying HIV is kind of the made-up bad guy.
HIV is the 11th, I call it the 11th commandment. You used to have commandments like 4 and 7 or whatever about coveting and wives and so on. But nobody follows that anymore. Or if they do, if they break it, you get a divorce and go to therapy.
Very loosely followed.
Yeah, loosely followed. And maybe it was always loosely followed, but it was there to say, look, we have to have some rules because boys are so horny that they will just do an untold amount of damage and they'll have too many kids and they won't take care of them. And girls, on the other hand, need to tolerate to some degree a husband that they're not crazy about, maybe help him grow up a little bit, at least for a while, at least within reason. Now, if he never grows up, I don't think that people should stick together if nobody's growing. That's, I don't believe till death do you part. You can have a million deaths in a lifetime. I don't think that you should really take it all the way. But we used to have rules. And when those went away, the liberal elite and the children, and I talk about this in chapter 6 of the book, HIV, the Scarlet Letter. HIV is a scarlet letter. You put it on people. We test brown-skinned people from Africa. We test low-income people. We test pregnant women who are poor. And we test gay people. All of these people traditionally have been sort of slightly undesirable by society to some degree or another. And so we test people with a test that comes up for everything, positive for everything, by the way. That's the trick. Test comes up positive for pregnancy, drug abuse. That's what I just said. HIV tests come up positive for like every known medical condition, vaccination, former pregnancy, arthritis, just keeps going down the list. So the tests are not reliable. The tests come up positive for everything. You then take groups of people, you tell them that they have a sex disease, they can't breed anymore. You tell them that they're permanently infected, can never get better. You give them drugs. The drugs are poisonous. Lo and behold, some of them die.
Right. But do you think that the effects from, we all saw the movie Philadelphia with Denzel Washington and Tom Hanks, and Tom Hanks' character was gay and he died of AIDS and he was discriminated against. But the complications from AIDS toward the end that seem to be, that seem to happen to everybody. Do you believe that that is from the medicine and not from the disease itself?
Well, what was the gay community doing? The myth of the movie was that he went into a movie theater. It was filmed in Philadelphia, and the theater, I believe, was called the Roxy. And I actually worked at that movie theater. It was just weird happenstance. I actually worked there and they shut it down and they filmed that segment where he goes in, supposedly has the one experience with the guy that gives him the dreaded whatever. Well, the reality of the gay community is, number one, what makes men different from what makes gay men different from straight men, so-called straight men?
That they have sex with their same sex.
Well, yes. And that's it. That's the only thing that makes them different. The other answer for that is women. Women act as a giant break. they are giant screaming neon sign that says, no, you will not pass. Men will have sex. Young men will have sex 26 hours a second, 150 days a month. I know that doesn't make sense, but that's what they will do. And they will. If women acted like men, men and women would have sex all the time. They wouldn't need to know each other's names. They could do it in elevators. They could do it at work. They could do it
at, like rabbits.
At the donut shop. It wouldn't matter. But women are not like men. Women say, excuse me, I don't even know your name. You're disgusting. Who are you?
Who are you is the next question.
Who are you? What are you going to, what are you about? And in the long term, are you going to be able to help take care of a family? Now, men who are attracted to men, and I consider homosexuality to be a normal occurrence among the human species, but it is fraught with peril because men who have sex with men have to deal with the fact that their sexuality is going to be reciprocated much more easily. And what happened was these guys, they're discriminated against culturally. They're not allowed to form long-term relationships. Everybody, it's not even now, it's much more liberated, I guess, or people are better liked, but people could be killed. You could be beaten up on the street and murdered just for being a homosexual. Well, that's a big deal. That's not a small thing. So people walk around with that kind of fear in their minds. So they live in these ghettos in New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco. You can't leave the ghetto. You can't be gay outside of the ghetto. You can't go back to Kansas again. And I cover all this in chapter 6, by the way, of the book Official Stories. Go online, buy it on sale. And so you end up in this totally self-torturing community of people that's doing constant drugs. Why constant drugs? Because you have constant STDs, real STDs, not make-believe STDs. You got syphilis, you have herpes, you have you have bacterial infections, you have colon forms, and you're taking the antibiotics, which are destroying your intestine. And the intestine, as you know, Joni, is the heart of the immune system that protects your blood from the pathogens on the outside. And these trillions, hundreds of trillions of bacteria make nutrients for you. They digest your food. If you strip this away with regular courses of antibiotics, you have a porous, leaky gut. If you put benzene in the lubricants in your colon and you wash it out with these shower attachments, which they did, you strip your colon and you're leaking into your blood from the inside of your colon. Now, Tom Hanks didn't get sick in the movie. I mean, the real people didn't get sick in the movie for mysterious reasons. They got sick for the exact reasons I just told you.
Right. So we're looking at rounds of antibiotics, of course. So then if you strip your immune system of it being able to help itself or fight for itself, then the illnesses, but the lesions and everything else that you see that are common.
The lesions, by the way, occurred in the people who were doing, doing this inhalant drug, which was a carcinogenic inhalant drug called amyl or butyl nitrate, otherwise known as poppers. And these guys would huff this thing and it said flammable, fatal if swallowed on the side of the freaking bottle. They'd be huffing it all night long because it allowed them to have more and more and more and more penetrative sex. When I say that it was being a male, because there was no lesbian AIDS epidemic. There was no female AIDS. It has been no heterosexual Western AIDS epidemic. Now in Africa, an AIDS patient is anybody who hasn't had a meal in a couple of days and has polluted water. That's how you diagnose AIDS over there. It's not even worth talking about in the same breath. It's poverty. But in the gay community, it was ghettoized young men who had nowhere else to go, who lived inside of these very incestuous relationships over and over again, going out to party, never really getting a break, taking uppers to keep their energy up, taking downers so they could get some sleep, taking handfuls of black market tetracycline when they went into the baths, washing their intestinal mucosal lining out, and gut bombing with black market antibiotics all the time. You do that for, if I did that for 2 months, I'd be probably dead. They did it for years.
And just, that to me shows the resilience of the human body. I mean, just on general principle, the things that we do to ourselves or that this culture does to themselves with medicine.
But they die.
Poisonous drugs, they do die eventually.
Well, that's what early AIDS was. I mean, they fell apart and they couldn't be healed. And then when they went into the hospital, the brilliant doctor said, oh, we'll give you more antibiotics because the antibiotics you're already taking clearly aren't helping. So they gave him Cipro. And then they did weird stuff. They heated blood and put it back in the body. Then in 87, they approved a cancer chemotherapy drug called AZT. And AZT destroys, suppresses bone marrow. Now, it also, it kills your liver. I mean, it just kills your liver dead. And it's like a super antibiotic, but it actually suppresses bone marrow. Now, I don't know about you, but I've never tried to live without blood, but that's what happened.
Yeah, I don't know how we can do that. The early doctors in the, 1700s, when they were doing bloodletting, they're, you know, a lot of those patients died when they were trying to help them live without blood. But now this was all happening from the inside.
Right. And so these guys who've got no gut, no liver, no intestine, no nothing left, are suddenly given a failed chemotherapy drug, too toxic for even the cancer. And they're put on it for the rest of their lives. Well, a lot of these guys die in 8 weeks. So the AIDS death rate, which was on the decline in 86 and 87, at about 12,500 so-called AIDS patients. And AIDS is any disease that occurs in somebody who you say is at risk for AIDS. So it's pretty circular. But the death rate got up to about 45,000 about 5 years later in the AZT era. Then when they took AZT off the market, the death rate declined to levels of, before high-dose AZT. And what I'm telling you is the short version. I could bore you with, all the detail, Robert Gallo, da-da-da. I'm just telling you what happened in the body. That's what was going on.
Yeah, and that's important because it brings a whole new light to the AIDS epidemic. I was in high school and middle school when AIDS came on the scene as something that had to be, that we had to have education about, that we had to be aware of. So you're saying, of course, that it's more than just it being an STD, which we were, of course, always told, but there was a bigger story behind it. Like I said, how did the monkey, let's go back and kind of disassemble some of the official story. And the official story was that it came from some freak virus from a monkey in Africa and then got brought over here. And then it got spread among gay men.
Yeah, well, that's a myth. I mean, there was a guy called Robert Gallo, and he was chasing viruses that cause cancer. And long before he got into the deal with gay men, he just thought that every virus that caused any disease came from Africans through the slave trade and was sexually transmitted. He had a number of candidates. Like, he blamed leukemia that these Japanese people had on a sex virus that came through the slave trade and from Africa. So it was just on his mind. That's who he was, Robert Gallo. It turned out the people who had the leukemia, by the way, lived within a couple hundred miles of Nagasaki. So people who had been exposed to radiation. So he wasn't a really good scientist.
Right, or a really good researcher as far as looking in environmental
factors. Well, he didn't care. They were chasing viruses. Richard Nixon started a war on cancer and to deal with his problems as a president, threw $100 million of 1970s money at it, real money, before he took America off the gold standard. And that was it. A virus now causes cancer. Well, the HPV thing is predicated on the work that Robert Gallo did in that Japanese population, where he said that a virus that he couldn't find. By the way, they don't even look for viruses. They look for proteins, and they say they belong to a virus. Or they look for an enzyme, and they say that belongs to a virus. And they know it doesn't. They know that enzyme comes from anything. They know that those proteins are found throughout the body. That's why HIV tests come up positive for so many things, because they weren't made of any particular particle. They were just drawn out of sick people. The proteins, they're just proteins. They react with other proteins. That's why there are 110 conditions that make the test come up positive. Let's separate this for the audience. I'd say that AIDS as an immune deficiency is real. You can have immune deficiency for, 150, 200 reasons, maybe 1,000 reasons. You can be drinking.
That can be brought on from birth, from not being, immune deficiency can start in utero.
It can?
It really can. Oh, yeah.
You can have it from bad water. You can have it from being vaccinated. You can have it from having colon forms, feces in your water, which is what Africa has. That's why they have diarrhea over there. They have colon forms in their water. They have sepsis, giardia. I mean, they have all these.
And wouldn't the money be much better spent on digging clean wells for clean water and giving them nutritious food?
And it's been done, and people have tried to do that and healed patients with so-called immune deficiency. So the clinical AIDS has no particular definition. and HIV is fake. I mean, they'll tell you that they have like 10,000 or so different ideas of what they consider to be HIV, and none of them do anything. No, I mean, they're not viruses. They just do this experiment. They pull some stuff out of somebody. And they say, well, this is indicative of a virus.
You want to know a scary story for me?
I'll share
this. I was 17 years old. I was born premature. I had to have blood transfusions in 1978, and I was not a promiscuous person. I was, in fact, still a virgin in high school, and I donated blood one time. I had had a cold 2 weeks prior. They called me back into the office, sent me a certified letter, and said, well, we had an antibody that responded to the HIV/AIDS test.
Right, because they're not real tests. They come up positive for everything, but they let you off the hook, right? Because they said you weren't in a risk group.
But I still had to be tested.
But they let you off the hook.
Every 6 months.
They let you off the hook. Mm-hmm. See, you're a white middle class girl. I'm sorry for the scare, but if you had been a gay man, they wouldn't have let you off the hook. They would have said, "Oh, you're HIV positive," and that would have been that.
You think basically it was some form of population control?
It's a subtle thing. It's not like people have ever gone out of their way to help gay people have rights. So this is, you know, and what it is in the African American community is as somebody, a friend of mine said the other day, it's just Jim Crow sort of version two. We're going to look at you people who we consider to be lesser than, you know, we are going to think of you as being dirty and not able, not worth breeding. Well, this is just the old eugenics thing, what you just mentioned. But it's a subtle thing. It tracks through our society and it's projected unconsciously onto whole groups. I mean, liberals say they like gay people, but they only like them if they go out and expose their blood to the scientific elite to say whether they're permanently infected with something. The tests have no standards. The test manufacturers will tell you the tests have no standards. They'll say this test cannot determine if you're infected with anything. That's why the Office of Medical and Scientific Justice has won, I think, 40 cases in the last couple of years where people have been accused of spreading HIV. And they say they depose the HIV experts. They go in and they put the test on trial. They say, can you prove within any version of a reasonable doubt that the person's actually infected with anything? Well, the judge advocate general of the U.S. military, of the Army in North Carolina, just dismissed all charges, all HIV charges against the lieutenant there. It's a hell of a thing. You know, when the military says we can't make this HIV test thing stick in court, you know it's bogus.
Well, the thing that keeps going through my mind, and I'm trying to make sense in one sentence and think with the other part of my head here, but is, you know, what gets me is, okay, we had Magic Johnson. He came out. He had that. And nope, and he's not dead. And yet nobody has heard, really, it's almost like once he started doing better, the news of AIDS and HIV, and yes, the awareness is there, but the hype and the urgency that we had in the 90s totally died off in the 2000s.
Because they stopped giving AZT at high doses. I mean, AZT was the monster drug. They gave it at 14 to, I think, 1600 milligrams of a cancer chemotherapy, bone marrow suppressing drug that strips your guts. Now scientists will tell you that the heart of the immune system is the intestine. They'll tell you that at least 80% of your immune system is your intestine. You take antibiotics for a day, you have diarrhea. You take it for a week, you begin to punch little holes in your gut. You bleed out of your stomach and out of your intestine into your blood. You have sepsis. You have blood infections. What did these early guys have? They had blood infections. They had candida. They had all of these overgrowths. The guys who are huffing these carcinogens, yeah, they came up with carcinogenic lesions, you know, cancerous lesions. It's not that bloody complicated, but the mainstream wants us to worship fear and death. And again, it's about having rules about sex because we don't have any rules anymore. We just don't have any rules.
So, well, I think it's amazing that you exposed this. I think it's important that we explore a lot of these diseases that we have in our times and try to find out why and maybe what other factors are contributing to them.
I thank you for letting me expose myself on your show.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. How do you feel?
Good. Surprisingly good.
Good. I'm glad. So yes, Official Stories is on sale now. You can go to liamscheff.com. That's liamscheff.com. His book is also on amazon.com, and you can get it for a discount, right, Liam?
Well, the discount will, once I raise the price, I'll have a discount code, so it actually comes back down. So just look up Official Stories online. It's at Create Space. It's on, I got Official Stories by Liam Sheff at Facebook, you know, the Facebook thing. I got people following, having a good time there, sharing reviews, information. So it's a whole little community, a whole raft of people that are coming around and enjoying this. And I like you, Joni, for it, because we talked about getting this kind of thing in this book, particularly into like homeschools and charter schools. It's a great counter argument to the make-believe history books that we have to choke down.
Yeah, I agree, which is why I love it so much. It's a living book. It has fascinating information in it, and it also helps present the other side, which I'm always willing to look at.
Thanks so much.
That wraps up another edition of Homegrown Health, only found on naturalnewsradio.com, where the best in health talk radio lives. You can join me on Facebook, like me, at Homegrown Health. Just go to facebook.com/homegrown health or email me anytime. I'd love your feedback. HomegrownHealthRadio@gmail.com. Mike Adams is next with the Health Ranger Report.